CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. All right, it's all happening. It is a Monday morning, and we're up, we're live, we're ready to go. We're alive, which is good. I see Gary Vonnevelt says, good morning from Devilsdorp and proud of it. Okay. All right, Gary. That's what you say. Bulelo's here, and Leanne, and me, and you, and that's really all that matters. You can definitely feel things are improving, but they tell me there's this really horrible cold front coming. This really spoiled my whole day yesterday. I got this warning from, you know, everybody who, now suddenly everyone's a meteorologist as well. They're like, well, there's this terrible cold front coming, and it's heading straight for us, and there's going to be snow in Johannesburg. Wouldn't that be nice, though?
It would be, but it's not going to be in the places where either any of the three of us reside. It's going to be sort of Witwatersrand side.
Where's that?
It once snowed in primary school when I was playing soccer, and we had to put on jerseys at halftime, literally in the middle of Rhinestone. That literally happened. They forced us, both teams. Yeah, yeah. No, that I'll never forget it.
But you got snow. Like,
yeah.
It did snow in Johannesburg a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yes, of course it did, Gareth.
People told me that. People told me that, but when I drove around, it looked like it was just a little bit of sleet. It wasn't snow. Come on.
You live in Centurion. Nice things don't happen there.
I was in Joburg when that supposed snow happened. You're all talking shit. It was nothing. Maybe my expectation just didn't meet the reality. I don't know.
No, it wasn't Chamonix.
No.
Just to be clear, yeah.
No, sure.
It didn't crunch under your foot as you walked.
How boring. Beth says it snowed here in 2012. Ah, pa.
Yes.
Hermin says Santon. I was in Santon when it snowed. It was awesome. Bullshit. All of you are lying. You're all talking.
Paris, what are you talking about? It was a big thing.
It wasn't snow. It was pathetic, man. Please. It was a little bit cold.
It's etched in my memory.
You're suffering from a multiple, what do you call this? Like a group delusion.
Confirmation bias.
We're not suffering. I think you're suffering.
There was nothing. You're all full of shit. So Andy says, Andy says, yeah. in response to Gary's message, that Gary's very proud of living in Devilsdorp, Krugersdorp, right? So Andy says, Gary, don't forget to satanize when going into public places. as opposed to sanitize. Yes, excellent. Very good. So, seriously, can either of you, are you more well-versed in this thing than I am? I'll take your word on the snow having happened once before, but do you really think that it's going to, you know, we're going to have proper snow, or is this just nonsense that someone's made up to get us all scared?
But what's proper snow? Like, are we talking like this needs to be Val d'Isère, I'm putting my skis on? Or
no,
what do you mean,
man,
by proper?
Obviously, we're not at the right altitude for all that kind of thing. We're never going to get like a layer of snow this thick. You can't do anything with it. It's not going to happen here. We're going to have like a little dusting of it. It'll be like when it's meant to rain, but it's suddenly it's this very strange gray, and then these little tiny droplets that turn to ice just before they hit the earth. That's kind of what's going to happen, and it'll be barely noticeable to most people because they'll be so busy. They'll be so busy on their phones, they won't even see anything.
I think definitely the outlying areas of Joburg will experience snow. The parts of Joburg that you exit from when you're driving towards Cape Town or Durban. Know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. It snows in Clarence. It's like an hour and a half drive away, like maybe two. I don't know what Gareth's talking about.
You mean, but like the shitty parts of Joburg? What, like Heidelberg?
I meant Witwatersrand. What did I say?
But where is that? Because I thought the Witwatersrand was the whole area. That's like a description of that whole ridge that they used to find.
Now I'm going to have to go onto Google Maps and look, guys.
There's no such place as that. Hey, what are you talking about? Give me proper geography here. What's wrong with you? first thing in the Monday morning and you're talking shit.
Get back to me. I'm researching.
All right. While she's researching, whatever. No, what do you mean? I mean, here's Derek. He says, Leanne, what do you mean Witwatersrand runs?
Well, I don't know what it's called. Hang on.
Yeah. I mean, this is like me saying,
when you get in the car and you start traveling to Durban?
Yeah, then you have to...
What are some of the first cities that you see and you think, not cities, but just towns, and you think, oh, God, thank goodness I don't live here?
Heidelberg. Heidelberg, Germiston, if you drive that way. Just terrible places.
You know when I know that things are going downhill, Gareth, yeah. It's when I start to come to your area. There's the mint. Well, what's that mint place?
Yeah. Yes.
Once I go past that mint place, things change.
Things change
for the worst.
For the better.
You mean and then I know I've left the sanctuary.
You know, I was driving on, was it Friday? Yeah, Friday. And yeah. I drove past, you know, you got like Steyn City and then you've got like Diepsloot, right? And you couldn't have much more contrast than that. You got Steyn City, which is this kind of new money paradise where, you know, they're building these enormous blocks of flats and they've got these huge houses and, you know, it's supposedly very, I don't know, it's a zhuzh neighborhood for some people. And then right next door, you've got Diepsloot, which is like just squatter shacks. And, like, literally people are wading through rubbish to get to their front door. And I thought about this and I'm like, you know, only in South Africa could we have this kind of thing right next door to that kind of thing. Only here.
Not true. Stanton, in Russia, it's even
Stanton, worse. And Addicks Township. You know, it's an incredible contrast. It's bizarre to me. And you can see it. You look out of your left window and you literally see the squalor. And you cover your right, out of your right window.
If you look through your left window, you'll see something else.
And you'll see, like, swimming pools.
Now, that Freudian slip is actually poignant there. Once you look out your white window, it's not too bad.
That's so funny. Right, exactly.
Oh no, God.
Robin says you drive through Krugersdorp, and that's Robin, you're talking absolute nonsense. Krugersdorp is west. You're going southeast. Yeah. I'm never going to take directions from Robin. If someone called Robin gives me directions, I'm going the other way. That's it.
Yeah.
Leanne is still using those nationalist party maps.
So what a mental in the Transvaal.
The Witwatersrand in the Transvaal, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, like, well, it's no fun. Yeah. All right, yeah, excellent. Ruth says,
sorry, I was looking through my white window.
Don't have Wi-Fi at the moment, so we'll download later. Been missing you guys. Thank God for Cliff Central. All right, thanks, Ruth.
No.
So listen, speaking of rumors, it's not just that we've got this terrible cold front coming that's going to freeze our bollocks off, but we've also supposedly today there's going to be all kinds of shit all over the country, right? So don't say you didn't hear it. Like, I don't know how much of this is rumor mongering, because it's become... You know, with the coronavirus and all the lockdown scares, tomorrow Cyril's going to ban alcohol or whatever. There's so much bullshit out there, so much fake news, that you don't really know what to believe anymore. So I don't know. When people say to me, oh, there's going to be some trouble, because today Jacob Zuma's, you know, they're protests and people are just going to take the streets. It's going to be... all kinds of unrest, that's the word they use. Now, they may be right, so I'm just repeating it in case they're right, and then you say to me tomorrow, oh, thanks for telling us. But I don't know. I don't have any facts to say that anything's going to happen. Also, I think the faction of people who caused all that shit a couple of weeks ago, I think they were kind of chased home with their tails between their legs eventually. And I think many of those people were just opportunists who took advantage of chaos to, you know, steal a TV or whatever. But I don't know that they're that organized. Certainly, if they might have been organized a little bit more for that one, but this one, it looks like, and again, I say this with my, you know, fingers crossed, it looks like Cyril and the team might be a little bit more prepared. They might have actually got some, in inverted commas, intel on this one. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've seen videos of lanes, kilometer-long lanes of SANDF people coming in the Phoenix area of Durban.
Right.
Police cars.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, Chris says everything's fine in Salt Rock in Durban. Oh, yeah, well, that's great, Chris. As long as you're okay, that's all that's anything that matters to us. Tracy says when people still talk about the PWV area, the Pretoria Witwatersrand Vereniging area. Yeah, that's great.
You want to hear the biggest joke in the world?
What?
So let me call my father conservative.
Yes, and sounds like a good conservative gentleman.
He came back from Germany.
Yes.
And I grew up in an area close to where you're talking about, Dipsloot. And he came home from what my sister says was a week.
Yes.
And he doesn't do traffic and Mets. And
mm-hmm.
within a week, he was living in the Vaal, as Leanne and her people might say, with the NPM maps.
Mm-hmm.
But you won't believe who lives on his road.
Who?
Pierre Boerter's house is one of the houses, and the de Klerk household. Because you know the NPA used to be in the Valde.
They were very strong.
So he lives in a place called. So he lives in a place called Three Rivers now.
Okay.
And so on his road, literally, de Klerk, the de Klerk household and the Boerter household.
Well,
yeah.
that's convenient. I was speaking to a friend of mine who, she lived out on a farm, but it was quite near to Tokyo Sekhwale's little weekend getaway, and she said they never had load shedding and shit there. So you know,
we're in Cape Town.
Here in Gauteng. So no, here, sort of out near, I suppose, you know, Hennepin River, that kind of area. Anyway, she said the lesson that she learnt then is always find out where the prominent politicians live, and live near them. You won't have any problems. The roads will always be
good. I have
good.
Two in my road.
Oh, you do? Yeah, now, yeah, where you are now.
I've not had load shedding once. So that's why I always say thoughts and prayers whenever I hear about load shedding. I've read about it. I have not experienced it once.
Do you know where Cyril lives?
I know where he lives in Hyde Park, but I don't know where he lives. I think he has another house
out
here in Princeton.
I don't know where he lives when he's in Joburg, and that irritates me because I used to know where Jacob Zuma lived, and you know, I like to know where these things are. I drive past and
people have got to know.
You got to know when to go like this past a politician's house. Put your middle finger up. You know, Tracy raises something really interesting I saw on the internet. There's shit brewing down under. All sorts of protests and revolts are being planned. I saw this over the weekend and I thought, oh, my friends in Australia have finally grown a pair of bollocks. They've finally grown some balls. They're starting to stand up for themselves. In places like Melbourne, they're actually openly protesting. Dictator Dan, who said there will be no meeting on a footpath and having a beer and being in the sun. And he actually said this weekend, you are not to talk to other people because talking to other people could put you in hospital. And then he said,
no.
Oh, no, he did. This is what he said. He said, don't go outside and watch the sun set. It is very dangerous. I mean, this is the kind of thing that this guy's actually saying. I mean, this guy has to be the world's most disconnected little shithead dictator you've ever seen. It just shows you, like, you know, in power, some politicians, you give them a bit of power and you see what their quality of character really is. And this little turd, I mean, if I lived in Victoria State, which is where Dictator Dan is the premier, I would be livid right now. Apparently people in Melbourne were protesting and they're being hit with rubber bullets by police. And it's really just, it's time that people there just stood up against this nonsense. If you really believe in anything to do with civilization or liberty, this is what you ought to do in Melbourne and Australia. Really, it's outrageous that people are being treated like children.
I don't know if it's going to work if people revolt, because so to me, what it seems like is that the leadership in Australia are so focused on doing the right thing and being seen properly and being seen as being doing the right thing, that if there are protests, they might clamp down on those people.
Oh, they will. We'll try.
And ignore the issue.
They love it.
And ignore the issue behind it, just so that they can see that they were, no, don't worry, everyone, we're in control. We nabbed the few.
Yeah. I know they'll try that. But if there's so many people that they can't, that's when you win. You know, it always it's really like politicians always operate in a very, very thin margin of error. Like, it's very easy for just a few people to tip that margin in the favor of everyone. And it just takes balls. That's really all it takes. And, I mean, Dad says not enough people in Australia will protest. The majority don't have the balls because they actually love being told what to do. What is it?
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I was just going to say, in places like that, there's something in psychoanalysis they call manufactured consent, is that you don't need to actually tell the people what to do. They followed the rules for so long and you've kind of beaten them down by like a slow drip of taking their rights away so long, and they think they're free. And it generally happens in the first world. You see it now, especially with like UK, Australia, is we used the word supine last time, but they're so passive in those countries. They are such, there's no way they're protesting. They don't know how to.
Well, this is, maybe you've answered Derek's question already, but he says, what is it about politicians that makes them feel superior to the very people that put them in their positions? They get addicted. The trappings of power are extraordinarily addictive. And if you are used to having the highway cleared for you so you can go really fast, and you're used to not paying for anything, and you're used to someone figuring out all the things that you need to worry about that ordinary people, you know, deal with on a daily basis. So, you know, my kids need to go to X or Y school. I need to get up at this time in the morning. I need to worry about what's for supper. All those things that we think about, the politicians have someone deputized to take care of them. They become infantilized in some parts of their life. And then in other parts of their life, they get to make these wide, far-reaching, incredibly important and life-changing decisions for others. And they start getting a bit of a God complex. They start to actually believe that they're special. They forget how they got there. They forget why they got there. And they start to think in their mind that they start to conceive of this idea that they might be extra special. They might have some secret ingredient the rest of us don't. And it goes straight to their heads. You could see it. That's why it's so hard to wedge them out of position once they're there. They hate it. They hate being reminded that they're just human and mortal and ordinary. This is so funny. Annette, just making my point about the contrast in South Africa. Right next to Porsche on Witkoppen is a squatter camp.
That's yeah,
exactly right.
Very true.
I've seen it. That's crazy.
I mean, the Cape Town is a perfect example of where you find these incidents, where you've got like a quite a fancy house, and literally on the border is a squatter camp.
Yeah,
half bay.
Andy says that Dr. Abdul Karim has stated the fourth wave will hit us in early December and will last 75 days. And people are already repeating this on mainstream media. This is according to Andy. I mean, how? How do you predict this? And also, so what? So fucking what? Let's get back to work. Let's stop with this lockdown shit. It's not helpful anymore. People now have the opportunity to get vaccinated. They must go and get vaccinated if they're worried about the coronavirus. And let us open the country up. We simply cannot afford to carry on with these dumb rules, these curfews, these restrictions on buying things on a Friday or a Monday, these outrageous incursions into our freedom. We should not have to put up with this. And I'll tell you what, if the government think they can keep going ad infinitum, bringing a new wave whenever they need to renew Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma's state of, I don't know what they call it, awareness, emergency, high alert, whatever it is, fucking nonsense. Stop it. It's childish, and it needs to end now. Because after the fourth wave, they're going to say, there's a fifth wave. And by the time we get to 2073, we'll still be sitting around, those of us who've lived that long, and we'll be going, what is it now? It's the 52nd or 53rd wave. Yes, we're going to live with coronavirus forever, and some of us will die from it. And you know what? In between, there are those people who will just get on with their lives and won't even be touched by coronavirus. It's now endemic. It's a part of life. It is pointless to wear these stupid masks, to sanitize, to lock people, to stop children from going to school. Stop being stupid, you fucking morons. This thing kills a tiny percentage of people, and I'm over it now. I'm not having this conversation with people anymore. When they start with, have you heard there's a fourth wave on the way? I go, yeah. Yeah. It's coming. It's going to be worse. It's coming for you. It's coming for your children. It's coming for your genitals. It's coming for everything you care about. Get fucking ready. It's going to be horrible. Horrible. It's going to take you out and your family and all the people you love. Get ready. And you know what? If it scares you, you're an idiot. It's just, you're stupid now. I cannot. It's like people who have no scientific background, who want to argue with me about whether or not the vaccine is effective. I don't want to hear from you. I'm not interested in what you have to say. If you want to get this vaccine, good. If you don't want to get it, fine. Then you take the risk. Get on with it. Leanne, you've had the vaccine now. Are you less worried about things? Are you living your life a bit more normally?
I've had the first one, and I am a little less worried. I feel a little more protected.
Good.
I'm meant to go on Friday for the second one, but I presume that the stations were going to be busy because of the opening of over 18s. Wait until the end of this week. I'm done and dusted. Then you know what? I've done what I can.
You've done what you can.
And then it's down to the same percentage as me being hit by a bus or dying of influenza.
Right. Or as in Australia's case, because that's why I'm so angry about this morning, is that there are places in the world where they just have stopped. Common sense has just flown out of the window. It's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
And then they'll never get back to normal. Some people actually don't want to. They don't like the idea of going back to normal because they like being in this the state of perpetual fear.
They've become used to this new normal. Mm. They're used to it now.
How about this? Right. Sorry, Leanne. And you're quite right. This new state, and I think you're onto a good point there. But I just want to say, your big mate Jacinda, she gets up early in the morning. It sucks. Jacinda says is New Zealand's rugby team now has now pulled out of the rugby championship. Yes. Right. So that's Australia, New Zealand, Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So Australia, get this. Australia went to New Zealand, they did all the political stuff, blah, 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 quarantined, did the whole thing, stayed in a bubble, in agreement that New Zealand would do the same. Obviously, you know, we're all conservative.
Got you.
Yeah. And, yeah, so New Zealand didn't communicate with anyone, not South Africa, not the other three teams that have moved heaven and earth to ensure that we're in the middle of this tournament. They announced it on social media that, oh, by the way, guys, we're not coming, Australia, by the way, and
you know what
forget South Africa.
You know what that's like? It's like you organize a braai with your four best friends, okay? Your three best friends. There are four of you going to braai together. And then one of them pitches up without telling anybody. No, sorry, doesn't even pitch up. Doesn't tell anyone that they've turned vegan and decides, well, they're not going to be catering for me anyway, so I'm just not going to pitch. Doesn't tell you and ghosts you on social media and on your phone. And you're all phoning them to check that they're alive because you think maybe something terrible's happened. But they just don't pitch for the braai. And then you find out 3 days later they phone you and they go, so sorry, I didn't come on Sunday. But, you know, I knew you guys wouldn't have any vegan food because you always eat meat. And you just, I didn't tell you.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Nobody, that's the kind of person. That's what New Zealand's turning into, that kind of person. It's like the Karen of nations.
But you know what pisses me off, right, is the fact that, like, when South Africa had, you know, there's always this thing, and it's why I just, politicians, let's push them all into the sea, all of them, yes. all of them, yeah. and let the sharks have them. Because you remember when South Africa had apartheid, right? And what did the world say? No political interference from that level of government in sport. There is no way you're telling me Jacinda hasn't stuck her fingers in this,
of
right?
Course
there is
she
no
has.
Way.
They all have.
So she has.
New Zealand really should be banned. Because it's very clear in the IOC.
That's right.
Any government.
Ban them.
Any government intervention is a ban.
Yeah.
You should be in isolation. Like, let's not take the piss here as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that really pisses me off.
Yeah,
bloody rainy, tiny little island. No one cares.
But on the other hand, sport is sort of going back to normal, right?
Oh, like, America's back. The NFL is about to launch. The Premier League's had full stadiums. We're back now. The global world, first world's back. South Africa,
and
maybe 2073, as
you
said.
And this just proves the point. Like, as soon as the media and government switch off the ticker tape at the bottom of the screen that tells you how many people are dead or infected, and it's usually infected, it's not even dead. Once they switch that thing off, which they've done from time to time, right? They switch it off, and then people stop panicking. They get on with their lives. Just stop it. Just stop. Stupid. Stop and stupid. ST. First two letters of both words. Stop being stupid.
Like in crisis, why do we always pander to panickers? Like, so I don't allow people who panic in my personal life. You're not allowed at my house. So I kick people out of my house who whinge. You're not allowed to whinge at my house. My house is not a place to come and whinge. I've kicked people out before, and I will continue to do it in life. No. You don't come.
Oh, God. You're not allowed to poo at Garrett's house, and you're not allowed to whinge at yours.
Yes, exactly.
No.
I'm so glad I've got my own house where I can poo and whinge.
Yes, you can poo and whinge. All right, go on.
No, but I just don't understand why people sort of pander to whinging panickers when there's crisis.
Well,
why are we doing
even
this?
Even worse, and I've said this a million times about South Africa, and I'm sorry if I sound like a broken record, but I can't believe we're still talking about this 500 or 600 days into our lockdown, is you're trusting the same people who you wouldn't trust, you couldn't trust to run electricity and water and basic infrastructure and service delivery. These are the people that they couldn't do those levels of things. You really think that they're in a position to deal with the pandemic? And they go, yeah, yeah. And these are the people who were saying to you at the beginning of it, no, but William Keith is an actual doctor. You're like, you mean the guy who's now been fired and is being investigated for corruption because he couldn't keep his filthy pig's trotters off of the money that he saw available for PPE tenders, and getting a company called Digital Vibes to funnel money to his family. This is the guy that you're going to trust to solve the health crisis that we're in? You deserve to be let down.
I just want to put something in here.
Mm-hmm.
There is a viral a video that's gone viral of some guy in the US at a forum of sorts where he's being filmed, and he releases some scary stats about the side effects of vaccines, etc.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I'm bringing it up is because I saw a number of South Africans reposting it on their TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen it, you'll know what I'm talking about. And just to debunk,
I haven't seen it. So is this guy an anti-vaxxer?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
And he mentions that, and, you know, I don't want to spread false information here. In fact, I'm not. I'm just reporting what he said. He said, basically, your children will be sterile if they have the vaccine, etc. So he's gone to the really extreme side of things.
There's no way he could know that, and that. There's no way you can know that.
No, exactly.
I'm talking from a scientific point of view. Not just that's how I feel. I spoke to somebody about that because I've heard about. Anyway, there's no geneticist in the world who would know that. But anyway, go ahead, because you can't.
He says he studied medicine at Oxford. Turns out it's in a town called Oxford in Ohio.
All right.
Secondly, he calls himself a doctor. He's a doctor in education.
Oh, God, like Jill Biden.
He's not a medical doctor.
Dr. Jill Biden.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So if you do happen to see that video, because he has a way of inciting panic and making you listen. So if you happen to see that video, just don't even bother watching it.
You know, it's
not based on science.
I'm not so worried. I don't understand this fear that people have for fake news as well. I mean, we've always had fake news. There's always been a bunch of people. Like I was saying earlier, there's this rumor mongering that goes around. Like today is the day of unrest, right? That today, you know, you don't go to certain places in KZN, and maybe it's true, maybe it isn't. Who knows? You really don't know. You can't even trust the mainstream media. Don't tell me you know for sure. We were saying this morning, jokingly, well, we're not sure if anything's going to happen or not. We don't even know if there's a cold front coming or not. So are we going to suddenly call all the meteorologists who are telling us this week it's going to be snow in Joburg when it doesn't happen, which is equal in chance to the fact that it does happen, it's 50-50, when it does or doesn't snow, are we going to go and fetch the meteorologists who said it was going to snow and put them in stocks in the middle of town and throw rotten fruit at them and never trust them again? Hell no. Now, do we call them fake news purveyors? Maybe some people will, but most of us will go, nah, they got it wrong this time. Move on. I don't care that there's some dude who's busy spreading anti-vaccine information. Those people who actually fall for that stuff, cool. We need to thin out the population. Let them believe him. It's the same as if there are people who are terrified of coronavirus, and they lock themselves in their houses, and they're wearing 4 masks, and they don't let their children even talk to them. That's fine. Those people are, by their own dysfunction and by their own fear, they're going to wipe themselves out. Good. We need to thin out the herd. I don't have a problem with any of that. Let it happen. And if there's fake news, tough titties, there's fake news. I'll still be able to decide for myself. I don't need Jen Psaki at the White House to tell me what I should and shouldn't believe. And I don't need someone on YouTube to say, this is or this isn't fake news, a fake fact checker. What do they call them? Fact checker, right? Don't worry, I'll be fine. I think I can figure out my way around this.
Debunker.
And if I can't and I'm the idiot, then I'll die and you don't have to worry about me spreading disinformation anymore. Let's just get on with it. What is this paralyzing fear people have for fake news too? There's always been fake news. You know those people who spread those stories about UFOs and Sasquatches in the mountains and like
flat earthers,
Loch Ness monsters. Those people have never been happier than when the internet was invented because they can find each other. You know, before, if you were at a school and there were, like, let's say there are 500 people at your school and you're a flat earther, you couldn't find another flat earther at your school. I mean, unless there was some other family who grew up under a rock. So what you did is you'd think it and then eventually you'd go, yeah, well, I mean, I better shut up about this flat earth theory of mine because I can't really find any fertile ground to sow my seeds on. Now with the internet, you go in there, you type in flat earth, there's a society of people, you can join, you can be on a Facebook page together, you can you can sit and talk shit to each other all day long. It's fantastic. I just love it. And God bless the internet for doing all of this for us. We get to have all the crazies in one convenient place. Follow those pages. It's hilarious. And if people say to you, you know, flat earth, do you believe that the earth is flat? Say to them, yeah, it's my favorite. That's what I think. That's where we're ahead of all those supposed scientists. We know the earth is flat. We can tell. That's our thing. I interviewed one of these guys the other day. I think you must go to the heart of these conspiracy theories. You must talk to the anti-vaxxers and the nutcases and the misinformation and disinformation people. Talk to them because it's hilarious. Don't be afraid of them. And when people ban this stuff, all they do is they give it more power. Because then it sounds like, ooh, it's something the government has banned. When the government bans something, people just want to know more about it. That's all that happens. So don't ban it. Don't give it power. Go straight to the heart of it and ask them, so what happens to the water on the edge of the earth? I'm curious about how that works. Oh, well, you know, it actually just goes right round the other side. Oh, really? That's fascinating. You've got to talk to these people because it'll blow your mind. How they justify this stuff. It's fantastic.
Do you know any flat earthers in your personal
life? Of course
I mean, I
not.
Met one, and I literally walked away.
You met one?
You said that. No, yeah, I met one, and as she said it, I stopped her and I walked the other direction.
No, it's like, I've got you're missing out. You've missed a chance there to learn some really funny things, some hysterical contortions and cognitive gymnastics. You've got to talk to these people. Don't be afraid of fake news. It's fantastic. Anyway, we've
ask
got to,
them all the questions.
Yeah, definitely. You could keep yourself busy for hours. Dr. Hanan is ready to talk to us. It's going to be okay, is what we do every Monday. How are you really doing this morning? Well, we're going to check in with Dr. Hanan about our mental health and our general psychological well-being. He is a psychologist, the head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Johannesburg. And Claire sent us a question for Dr. Hanan this morning. Hey, Dr. Hanan, how's it?
Hey, how's it, guys? How you doing?
Good, good. So Claire sent this question. She says, it's an issue that comes up often when we talk about mental health, but we haven't delved into it properly with the doc yet, so let's do this today. She says, what are the effects of social media on health? This kind of links to what I was saying just now about the crazy people on social media. But in some ways, there's some very serious things going on, and it's a conversation I actually had yesterday with a friend of mine who's a mom. She's got kids, and she has very special and strict rules in place for the kids when it comes to social media. But we almost need some rules for adults on social media, too, because people are so badly affected by this stuff. Of course, there are good. And we're not going to go into the benefits and the good things about social media because they are pretty obvious to most of us. But what do you think when people come to you and they say, oh, Dr. Hanan, I can't live without those likes? It's just become my chief focus, and the real world isn't as important to me as the virtual world. Where do you start with someone like that? And maybe that's an extreme, but you can give us an overview of the things you've learned about social media and the way it's impacting on mental health.
So when anybody comes to me and says, I can't live without ... that's when I start to worry. It could be likes, it could be a particular person, it could be an object, it could be a TV show. You should never be in a position where you can't live without any particular anything. And social media is, we're not going to go into the benefits of it, but no. If you don't use it wisely, it can be incredibly addictive. And we keep on, it's the gift that keeps on giving. You can come back to it over and over again to get your particular type of drug, and it doesn't go away. It keeps on renewing itself. It keeps on subjecting it to us. It's always available. You know, I always tell a fascinating story. My oldest patient ever was a 94-year-old, short, this high German lady. And she was telling me that, Hanan, you know, when I was growing up, time was time. And I said to her, what do you mean? And she said, think about it. If I wanted to communicate with a friend that lived in another province, I would write them a letter. Mm-hmm. It would take 2 weeks to get there. They would write a response, and it would take 2 weeks to get back. It would take about a month to say, hey, how are you? Good, thanks, and you. These days, God forbid you write somebody a WhatsApp, mm-hmm. and they blue tick you, and they don't respond within the first 3 seconds. Unfortunately, God forbid, I mean, wars I'm sure have been started by people not responding immediately. So the number of breakups that I see are because messages are not being responded to immediately. And what social media has done is that it created this lack of need to wait and be patient. Yeah. Back in the day, you had no choice but to be patient. That was the way it is. You couldn't hurry the postman up. You couldn't hurry the system up. It was what it was. These days, as I said, immediately you want that hit. You want to feel good about yourself. It's accessible just in your pocket. Think about it. The drug that you seek is accessible to you wherever you go. In your car, you want a hit? Mm-hmm. No issue. At work, you want a hit? No issue. You get out the shower, you want a hit? No issue. It's accessible and available. And this availability of this, and I'll define the drug in a second, but this availability of the drug is what makes it so potent and so dangerous, because nobody's judging you. Nobody's watching you. It's completely accepted.
Yeah.
And the drug that we all get from social media is this need to belong. We all feel that we are part of this crazy, amazing community and people like us. So think about it. how many friends you have on social, on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have, I don't know, 500, 1,000 or 2,000 friends or whatever it is. Friends. The term is friends.
Yeah.
Add a friend. I mean, it's a loaded term, but how many of those people would you actually say, these are my friends? These are the people that I would invite to my birthday. And these are the people that I would call when I need help or when I'm in trouble.
Mm.
Social media loads up these terms and suddenly you have 2,000 friends, 2,000 friends. And even if you think about it, the likes, if you get a like or a heart, again, a like is such a loaded word.
Yeah.
But how long does it take somebody to like your post or to like your picture? It's just they don't even look at the picture. They don't even read your comments. They press a button and you go, oh my God, this person likes me. So what social media has done really well is it kind of tagged onto this really primitive brain of ours that makes us feel that, oh my God, this person really likes me. This person is really my friend. And that's what we keep on going back to with such easy accessibility, which can be the danger.
You reckon it's that need to belong that we're talking about here. It's belonging is the most important reward, the sense of belonging from all of this. Michael says it's serotonin, but it's actually dopamine, isn't it?
Yeah, it hits the part of your brain that cocaine hits. So it's the reward centers of the brain that makes you feel that you've just won the Oscar or you just won a major award and everybody and the focus is on you in a positive way. Social media can highlight you and make you the star in a split second. And as you can see, what's happening with especially youngsters is that they don't get the likes through doing something appropriate and suddenly they get the likes by doing something inappropriate. And the bar keeps on raising and raising and raising because you get used to the status quo and people have to push the boundaries more and more. People suddenly have to start doing things that are completely out of appropriate realm to get the same like that they 3 years ago got just by, I don't know, posting a picture of themselves.
So what does this do to your mental health long term if that starts happening?
Yeah, well, it does the same thing to your mental health that drugs do to a drug addict. You become dependent on it and you're spending tremendous amount of time focusing on things that you shouldn't focus on as opposed to things that you should. So people say to me, Khanan, what's the problem? So you know what? So I log on to social media and I get the like, I get the hit of adrenaline or the hit of serotonin or the hit of dopamine. So what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is two things. How much time do you spend searching for the stuff that you should be spending at the gym or spending with your kids or spending at work? And suddenly you blame your life for not being good enough and you're not being happy because you're spending a lot of time searching for that like. But the biggest cost is the cravings that we have for it. So we get the like, it's like a cigarette. Think about smoking. That's the easiest way to explain. We have a hit of a cigarette for those of you that smoke and you put down a cigarette and the cravings start to build. You don't go back to status quo to feel good until you need the next cigarette. The craving starts to build and that energy that you use in searching for the next thing to give you that hit is what wastes your coins. Remember, I gave you the analogy of the coin theory.
Hmm.
You wake up every morning and you've got 100 units of energy. Right. That's it.
Right.
The moment your units are up, your body goes good night and you wake up the next morning with another 100. The problem is when you waste all your coins, you spend all your coins by 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and sure, you've got 10 hours in the day, but now you're functioning at a deficit. And the coins that we use, the energy that we use to satisfy the craving is not the energy that we're using on things that are meaningful to us to create ultimate happiness and ultimate fulfillment and purpose in life. That's the real cost.
Yeah, that's interesting. Go ahead, Mbulelo.
So, Dr. Khanan, I was talking to somebody who I view as an elder and someone very wise. And, you know, I think it's the great failure of the secular world. So, like, I don't have religion in my life. And one of the things that I was asking her was, how do we get back to community again? Because one of the things that secularism does is that you become hyper-individualistic, right? It's me, as long as I'm competent, is regardless of who we are and how smart we may think we are, we need community. We know that. We know what happens when people are alone. They do the most dangerous, most vile things and lean into that. Do you have any hope of, from a sort of social scientist world of us finding a way back to learning how to just be civil again, if you know what I mean, without needing social media.
Yeah. So, Bolelo, you're quite right. We do need to be a part of a group, a part of a context, because it calibrates us. We discussed it before where we do need feedback, and the people that lean on themselves for feedback, they fall apart because you can't calibrate yourself.
Yeah.
As much as we think we can be objective and calibrate ourselves, it just doesn't work. People actually go mentally skew when they try to calibrate themselves. An interesting analogy, you know, pilots, and I'll get to your point or you to answer your question in a second, Bolelo, but pilots are trained to never trust their own senses when they're flying. The pilots are trained to trust their instruments. My brother's a pilot, and what they do is they make them wear these visors that stop them from looking outside and trusting their senses. They actually look just at the instruments when they're flying. It's because your senses lie to you. So when you feel that the plane is upright, the plane could actually be upside down. And when it feels that the plane is upside down, it could be the plane is actually quite straight. So you should never trust your own feelings. And the problem with people is that they lean on instruments in the real world that, one, are skewed. And that's what social media does to you, which I'll get to in a second. Or they lean on their own senses, on their own feelings to tell them whether they're doing the right or wrong thing, which is also wrong. And what ends up happening in the real world is that when you lean on senses or on instruments that are skewed, you begin to gaslight yourself. Because the social media world will tell you when you do X that you're doing really well. And then the next day you do X again, and it tells you that you're upside down. And then you begin to second guess or actually go crazy because I don't know whether I'm doing right and wrong. And it's so therefore we do need to lean on feedback to calibrate us, but we need to lean on the right feedback, and social media is so inconsistent that it's wrong. So to get back to your question, social media eventually will just become incompetent at giving us that correct feedback, but I think it's going to catch us too late. I think we need to focus our attention on embracing groups that are healthy for us, from hobbies, from if you are religious, from religious groups to education, things and people, instruments that calibrate you in the right way, but you must be very conscious in going to chase that.
Do you think that might already be happening? Because I know lots of people who are opting out of social media completely, or certainly the worst kinds of social media. Like a lot of people I know have decided to take Twitter and Facebook off. I mean, I don't know which one is more addictive, and maybe you can help me guess. But I think for a lot of people, these things are just such time wasters that even if it's just from a pragmatic point of view, some of them you have to have in your life. Like I don't think WhatsApp's going anywhere anytime soon. It's a useful way for us to communicate. And WhatsApp is different because you don't just scroll, right? I mean, if you're not getting messages, you're not looking at it. And even if you are getting messages but you're busy with something, you defer the looking of the messages until you're done with what your task at hand is. Well, smart people, sensible people, people who are in balance anyway. It's probably starting to happen slowly, but I've encountered a lot of people in the last while, purely anecdotal, who've said to me they just don't have these apps on their phones anymore. It's taking up too much time, and they cannot justify it to themselves, and it's making them crazy. I use the word crazy in inverted commas here, but it's just a waste of their time. So do you think it's happening already?
You know, Gareth, I think most people are, let's just say the majority, are using social media in a healthy way because society kind of calibrates them. So work won't allow them to go on social media, and their wives or husbands won't allow them to go on social media. And when I say won't allow, is that the wives and the husband need their time, and their kids need their time,
right,
and their friends need their time, and their work needs their time. So it calibrates them and gives them X amount of time to go on social media.
Right.
But some people that don't have that kind of balance, they don't have a healthy relationship, or they don't have a healthy relationship with their kids or their friends or their social structures, or they don't have hobbies that take away their time away from social media. Those are the people that are at most danger of being addicted to social media. And addicts, and I'm talking about the ones that are addicted, people don't quit because they're sensible. You know, 20 years ago, who quit smoking? 30 years ago, 40 years ago, who quit smoking? Nobody quit smoking because even though the research was out there to tell them that smoking is bad, nobody cares because it feeds us on a very primitive, immediate level. So the reason why people quit social media, for that matter, any addiction, is because, one, because government comes in and forces us, or parents come in and force us, or work comes in and forces with policies, with rules, with regulations, which is what has happened with smoking. Or you hit such a low bottom that you have no choice but to look for alternatives. So with social media, there aren't any regulations. I mean, you can go on Facebook for 12 hours in the day.
No.
So unfortunately, I don't see people not hitting rock bottom before they make the psychological behavioral shift.
What does rock bottom look like in terms of social media addiction? What does it look like? Have you encountered people like this in your clinical practice?
It's really bad. It's really, really is bad. I'm talking about the kind of depression that doesn't allow people to get out of bed. I'm talking about the kind of relationships that we look at that are completely abusive, breaking down good friendships. I mean, we see this a lot. You know, you might have a friend that you go, oh my God, this person's gone off the rails. He no longer speaks to us. See people on a health level put on weight. They are physically unhealthy. They're mentally unhealthy. It's bad. Addictions are not pretty. It doesn't get better. The problem with addictions is that it doesn't stay the same. You know, no smoker goes from one cigarette to zero. People go from one to two to five to get the same hit. And the same thing with social media. It doesn't, you don't stay. It gets progressively worse, especially because it's updating and becoming a lot more novel. So the cigarette, so to speak, becomes much more entertaining and much more addictive because it's much more interesting.
Don't know what's just happened with your sound. Are you? There we go.
There we go.
There we go. All right. Well, we've got like a minute. I just wanted to know one last thing. Is this is a very important question, and I think it cuts right to the heart of what we're talking about. You know, this worries me endlessly.
Word is tachlas.
Tachlas. All right.
That's funny. That's hilarious. Tachlas.
This is very great. Important. Okay. Somebody says here, I wake up every morning. I listen to this show. Does that mean I'm an addict? This is from John. He says, Dr. Bushkin's analogy on social media. I wake up every Monday being addicted to this show. Does that mean I'm addicted? Is that a terrible thing? Very important.
Right. Well, you know, where there's one winner, there's one loser, there's always six winners.
Yeah, all right. Nice. All right, Dr. Hanna, nice to speak to you.
All right, nice to see you guys.
Yeah, we'll pick up next week. And by the way, if you've got a question or you want to actually come on and talk to Dr. Hanna about a problem that may not just affect you, it may be affecting lots of people, then please do that. Send us an email, gareth@cliffcentral.com or contact@cliffcentral.com, and we will connect you with Dr. Hanna, and we can all benefit from the little ride that you go on with him. Very nice to see you. Thank you so much.
Nice to see you guys. Okay. Be well.
Very good. There he is, Dr. Hanan Bushkin. It is 7 o'clock already. We've got lots more coming your way. Stick around, cliffcentral.com. Busy Monday morning, including Collectomania today, our favorite part of a Monday. Today we're going to speak to someone called Kim Jade, who's been on TV. You may recognize her. She's got a sneaker addiction, speaking of addictions, and her collection is unbelievable. So we'll speak to her about that. That's something I have in common with her. I'm also a bit of a sneaker addict. So we'll see whether or not we have problems, and we'll find out in the next hour. Stick around. CliffCentral.com. Monday, it's the 23rd of August.
CliffCentral.com.